Golf Smarter, number 463, published on November 18, 2014.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Struggling to make the tour with Australian pro Darren Garrett.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter podcast, Darren.
G'day, Fred. How are we?
Oh, we are very happy to hear g'day.
Well, it's a nice, beautiful morning down here in Perth, Australia.
And so, here in Northern California, the sun is about to go down.
Gotta love time difference, don't you?
No, I love Skype, that we can do this. And it's not going to cost either of us anything to make the phone call, because I really want to talk to you.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to talking to you as well, Fred.
Well, thank you very much for reaching out. I'm just kind of touched that you were listening and that you wanted to share your story. I find it very interesting. Basically, you are a golf touring pro wannabe.
Yes, I've done my traineeship through the PGA of Australia, so I can teach as well.
Okay,
But basically, it's in my heart to go and play across the world. I've been to various places throughout the world, namely through Asia and the South Pacific. But there's just a part of me that has always wanted to play the game. No doubt I love to teach as well. It's great seeing kids with a smile on their face after you give them a good lesson, or even adults. But
sure,
there's just a place in my heart that always wants to play, and it's hard to get rid of sometimes.
Yeah. So you're too competitive. You need to get out there and compete.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I see days where it's beautiful sunshine and I might be doing something else and my heart's going, what are you doing here? You should be out on the golf course.
Get the work done first.
Yes, absolutely.
Tell me, how long have you been playing golf?
I've been playing since I was age 10, so 28 years.
Okay. And at what point did you get it in your head that you wanted to play competitively?
Well, as a youngster, I was doing t-ball and baseball for a long time. And we just had a season where the coach was favoring his son as a pitcher. And we were losing basically every match. And it just wasn't fun anymore. And because I'm a sore loser, and I'm happy to admit that, I wanted to do something by myself. And at that time, I'd been playing golf sort of at a little club over in Victoria, just a little nine-hole place with my father. And when we moved over to WA, weather's beautiful over here, just decided to take it a bit more seriously.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, okay, sore loser, competitive. How did you start competing in golf when you were young as well?
Yes, over here we have what's called the Graham Arsh Junior Golf Foundation, and they host local tournaments for young kids up to the age of 18. So I just became a member of a private golf course called Lakelands Country Club, and then started playing those junior tournaments and just kept developing friends, and also started playing golf better and better, and then it just took off from there.
And how well did you do in the junior tournaments?
I won a couple, mm-hmm. but I did well enough that I got my handicap down to scratch by the time I was 18.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So and then
go ahead. I'm sorry.
And then before I turned pro, I was +3.
Mm.
So that also fueled the fire of wanting to see how well I could do as a golf professional.
So is this just more of a, gee, I wonder how I could do, or is it, okay, get out of my way, I'm going to take this place over?
I think it's a bit of both.
Hmm.
I think probably a lot of people saw it as, gee, I wonder how well he's going to do, whereas inside of me it's sort of, well, all right, let's go see how well we can be, and let's see how good we are against some of these top guys.
And what's the highest level you've competed at so far?
I went to Asian Q School in January last year.
Mm-hmm.
That was unbelievable. To be on a tour at that level, where everything's looked after for you. I was lucky enough to stay at the resort where they were playing the Q school, so all you had to do was roll out of bed and hop onto the golf course and get ready to play a game. Mm. And that was just unbelievable how different you looked after as opposed to some other places of where I've played and associations that have looked after me.
I'm not really familiar how Q school works. Can you give me a rundown and walk me through what it entails? And
okay, so with A's and Q school, we had 740 guys start off in first stage. Wow. So generally they run in two stages. I know with American, now it goes to the web.com, but with the American tour schools, they go through four or five stages. Mm-hmm. But with the one in Asia, it was only two stages. So when I went up there, it was spread over 2 weeks of first stage. So there was about 150 guys at each of the five courses. We played four rounds. After two rounds, there was a cut of 80 guys. So basically, it went in half from 150 to 80. And then after that, it was the top 20% of guys who entered went through to the second stage or final stage.
Wait, did you say there were 740 to start?
740 that started, yes.
Yeah, so what happened to them on that first round? Are they all playing different courses all the same time?
All playing different courses all at the same time, yeah.
I see, okay.
So if you got into the top 20%, then you would continue on to the next stage, which is final stage. If you didn't get in the top 20%, that was it. You finished.
You're done.
You're done. Mm. Whether it's 20 shots or one shot, you're done.
Right. And when you're done, do you get to try to come back next year, or they're saying, thank you very much, see ya?
Thank you very much, see ya for this year.
Oh, for this year.
Yeah, and then you can go back the following year.
And when you go back, what do you just fill out paperwork, or do you have to, in my business, we call it audition. What do you have to do to
playing is basically our audition, but what you have to do is just fill in paperwork, make sure you pay the right fees, and then find a flight and make sure you do all the proper visas, make sure you get your accommodation sorted out. So it's just a lot more than just playing golf. Mm-hmm. So with me, when I went up to Thailand, I flew Thai Airways that left from Perth straight to Bangkok. I could have gone from Perth to Singapore, then Singapore to Bangkok, but just really being in one plane direct flight was the most appropriate thing rather than spending a couple of hours or 3 hours in an airport trying to find your way through and then maybe having to go through customs. And it's just that added rigmarole that you don't necessarily want.
Yeah, no, wait, I'm kind of curious because I remember how long it took me to fly from San Francisco on the west coast of the U.S. down to Bangkok.
Yeah.
How long is it from the west coast of Australia to Bangkok?
Eight hours.
8 hours. That's a shorter flight. Okay.
Oh, all right. From the west coast of Australia, it's a lot easier through Asia than it is through even the East Coast. I think the East Coast of Australia is probably 11 or 12, something like that, because you can't necessarily get direct flight from where you are. So if you're in Brisbane, you might have to go to Sydney first and then up to Bangkok.
All right. That was one of my very famous whoops going in the other direction. So let's get back to your travels. Sorry.
No, that's all right. So I went, got into Bangkok, and then I took a 2.5 hour bus ride that the Asian Tour provided for us down to Hua Hin, which is a small coastal town in Thailand, and it's absolutely beautiful there. If any of your listeners get a chance to go to Thailand and play in Hua Hin, it's just beautiful. I played at Springville Village, but we also had Black Mountain, Banyan. I think there's a course, Royal Thai Navy, which I don't know if people can get onto, or there was also Imperial Lakeview. But all through that area is just absolutely beautiful. And then there's also working on the visas. You got to make sure that you have the correct paperwork, otherwise they won't let you into the country. And that's basically it. And then once you get to the tournament, you just basically play golf.
Wow! So I actually got to play in Phuket at the Blue mm-hmm. Canyon Country Club. Yep. Back in 2007, there's actually episode number 78 of Golf Smarter is my interview with their director of golf there. And I loved it. So what happens now? You're paying for everything.
Yes.
When you're headed out there.
Yeah.
In this is great for them. It's great. Oh, good. Now you're going to keep paying us and you got to fly and you got to pay for your overnight and just hoping. I mean, if you win or you make the cut, you're not winning any money in Q School, are you?
No money whatsoever. Oh. So basically, in a round ballpark figure, it cost me $5,000 to go up for Q School.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's quite the investment.
It is. It is.
That could be, it's gambling, basically, because if you don't make the cut, that's it. You got to wait another year, and then you got to come up with another $5,000, right?
Basically, yes. And I had a chance going into the final round. I shot 72, 72, 73 and was in that 20%. I hit two bad shots and I missed out on going through the final stage by two shots.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, that's terrible. I'm sorry.
But that's golf.
Yes, it is.
Especially
what, did you look at your scorecard going, ooh, I can make this. And then all of a sudden you make two bad shots.
Yeah, I think I had an uneasy sleep the night before because of the position I was in.
Mm.
And it sort of plays on your mind, and then you get up on the first tee, hit a good drive. Second shot was all right and made six out of nowhere. And when it boils down to it, those were the two shots.
Wow. Oh, man. Yeah. I see, I couldn't. That would not go well with me. Now, were you getting support from home of doing this, or were you all on your own?
I'm fortunate enough to work for a company that, well, a boss in particular that allows me to play my golf.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. When I'm working for Richard at a fast food place, if I'm not working for him, I play golf. If I'm not playing golf, I work for him.
I see. So that's you work in the fast food industry?
I work in the fast food industry. I actually clean a restaurant for Richard.
Mm-hmm.
I start work at 3 in the morning and finish at 11 in the morning.
So it allows you to play golf in the afternoon?
Plays golf in the afternoon, but man, it's tough getting up at 2:15, 5 days a week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It really messes with you. And it's got to make it tough to play golf well, too, if you're exhausted.
I think personally I'm used to it from the fact that that's what I've been doing all my golf life. Because you play golf during the day, you work nights. So whether you work at 4 in the afternoon to midnight or what I'm doing now, I think your body's used to the fact that you do your golf during the day and you work at nights.
Yeah. So you didn't make the cut that time?
No, I didn't make the cut.
How many times have you been to tour school trying to make the cut?
That was my first up in Asia.
Uh-huh.
I'm planning to go to Q School in Australia in December.
Okay.
And then we'll just see how my wallet is situated. I know the PGA Tour have now developed a tour in China. And there's also Canada as well. So we'll just see how things go over the next couple of months as to what we can do with regards to that.
So you've only been to tour school, the Q School, once.
Yes.
Didn't make it. But are you still able to play competitively in tournaments and that possibly can help your earnings?
Yes, absolutely. We just finished the West Australian Open here in Perth, which is part of the PGA Tour of Australasia.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Fox from New Zealand won with a impressive score of 23 under for 4 rounds.
Wow.
Yeah. I was really happy with how I played. I shot rounds of 72-70 and missed the cut by one.
Oh.
So, yeah. So 3 under was the cut, and we were all shaking our heads because I think that's maybe the lowest cut on the Australasian tour in history. I'm not 100% certain on that, but I believe that could be the case.
Oof. Oh, close to no cigar one more time.
Yeah.
So yeah.
You always rue the putts you miss and not the ones you get.
Of course.
I had an eight footer on the last for birdie to make the cut, and I just missed the edge. So.
And we complain here about missing a putt or two on a round. It's like, oh, I could have had a broken 90 if I just, oh, man.
Yeah.
How often do you get to play competitively?
In West Coast of Australia is tough.
Yeah.
We've got basically 2 months over May and April that we play. And then we've got the Australasian Tour coming around for the 3 weeks this week, this time. We've got the Perth International, which I tried to pre-queue for yesterday. Mm-hmm. I shot 75, but I had to have shot 67 to get into the field for that one. They only offered up 4 spots. So generally with pre-qualifications for tournaments, you might have X amount of spots that are available to go into the tournament. The West Australian Open one, we had about 24 spots, and there were 76 guys going for those 24 spots. Yesterday with the Perth International, we only had 4 spots available, and there was about 80 guys going for that one. And then next week in Kalgoorlie, they're still tossing up whether or not to have a pre-qualification. At this point in time, it is. So there's probably going to be about, I think it's about 40 spots and about 46 people going for that spot. So there'll be 6 people that miss out.
I hope you're not one of them.
Not the way I'm playing at the moment, I won't be, no.
Oh, good, good. Yeah. Okay, so now the father in me is going to ask a question that many fathers are thinking about right now. How long are you going to continue to try to do this and keep coming up with $5,000 to try to get, you know, on past Q school? Are you giving yourself a deadline to say, you know what, I've tried it 4 years, 5 years, 8 years, 10 years, I'm done? Or do you not even go there?
I actually did that with Asia. I got to a point where, okay, I've had enough. Hmm. But there's a part in me that just says, I got to keep going.
Yeah.
And it's just hard to turn off.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'd love to just go and teach golf. But there's just this part in my heart that wants to see me out there playing and mixing with the guys. It's sort of where I feel home. And judging after last week to only miss the cut by one, I know that I can mix it with them. And I suppose that's the other part. Like if I had played last week and shot 2 really bad scores, well, then it's probably easier to say, no, we'll go down a different path. But when you get so close to continue on to the afternoon, then it drives you a little bit further. So I would like to say to you, there's a cutoff time of when I turn 40, which is a couple of years, but I could get to 40 and still be playing great golf and my heart still wants to go in it. It's just something that you can't turn off.
Yeah. And you're at an age now where, you know, the most guys who are on the tour, you know, including Tiger, you know, we talk about him way too much, but he's still the name out there. You're getting to an age where it's going to be tough to compete with these young guns.
Well, it's going to be tough to compete with Tiger even when I turn 50. He's 50 as well, so I don't even get a break that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, but when you get to a certain age, unless you've done really well, I think hopefully your mind tells you that enough is enough.
Right, right. How are you able to, are there ways for you to keep your expenses down? Like you talk about $5,000. Is that $5,000 the overall cost to go through Q School, or is that something that you have to pay to them to get in on the tournament and get a chance?
No, the $5,000 was the overall. It was it was roughly about $2,000 Australian to enter the tournament. And then, of course, you add your airfares, your accommodation, your visas and all that. So that was the overall. And just basically working gets you through. Just being able to work for Richard and save up a bit of money that way helps me get to specific tournaments. Next week, for example, we're in Kalgoorlie, which is about, if you're driving, about 6.5 hours due west of Perth. And I'm flying there, and it's going to cost me $600 airfare return.
Wow.
So I've basically got to make the cut and probably finish in the top 20 to make my money back.
So in Q School, there's money to be won?
Not in Q School. It's not until you actually get on tour.
I see.
Once you get onto a tour like Asian tour or US tours, then when you start getting paid some of the money for endorsing clubs, using TaylorMade, using Titleist, then a sponsor will come along so you can have their name on your shirt. That's when you start making the money. But until that point, you've basically left to your own devices.
So you're not getting any sponsorship endorsement at all at this point?
Not at this point, except from Richard, which
I was going to say, except from Richard.
Yes.
Do you get to wear a shirt that has his fast food restaurant on your shirt while you're playing?
Yes, I do. Yes.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I hope he doesn't charge you for the shirts.
No. No, he gets a lot of joy seeing me do well. So.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice. So what can you do to keep your expenses reasonable?
It's a bit hard from the west coast of Australia.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, because
it's not like you can drive cross country, right?
No, well, as I said, it's 6 hours to Kalgoorlie, and that's still in our state. It basically takes to get to Melbourne, it'll take 3 days.
Mm.
Adelaide, you can do in 2, and Brisbane's probably about 4. But even with driving, there's costs of fuel.
Of course.
Accommodation. Like you pay whatever top price there is over the Nullarbor for accommodation because you're so far away from basically civilization. But even airfares, it's actually cheaper to fly to Bali return than it is to fly within Australia.
Oh, gosh.
So,
do you have any buddies that are also attempting to do this so that you can travel with them and share expenses?
Yes, there's quite a few of us. When I went up to Asia, there was quite a few guys from Australia. So we shared accommodation, which helped keep it down a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, when we play tournaments within our own state, we'll either drive with each other or stay in rooms together just to try and keep costs down, because even in some of the places, like when you go up to Port Hedland and Karratha in the far north, with the mining and all that, there's very little accommodation available, and whatever accommodation there is, they could charge you $300 to $400 a night, and that's not in a flash hotel either.
Wow.
So, and most of the time when we go up to those places, the members of the course will look after us. So we get billeted into their houses, and that helps immensely.
Does it cost more to play in some tournaments than others, and how would you make a decision of which ones to play?
Yeah, it does. Some of the local ones aren't too bad. The one that I'm playing today is at Lakelands is a $15,000 tournament, and that'll cost me I think it's about $20 to enter.
With and a $15,000 prize money?
With a $15,000 prize money, yeah.
Wow.
But they get that prize money through sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll have a sponsor. They might have a couple of sponsors put up that $15,000.
And so does that $20 cover if you make the cut all four rounds?
Well, the $20 is only for a one-round tournament.
Okay.
So we've just basically got a one-day pro-am where we'll look after sponsors or amateurs, play with them, try to play the best we can. But we also like to give out, for most of us as teaching pros or club pros, if the amateurs are having troubles, we like to hand out tips while we're going around.
Mm-hmm.
So that's – yeah. Well, that's one good part about having pro-ams is – and the best part about golf is someone like myself can play in the same group as someone like yourself, Fred, who's on a different level, and there might be a guy of single figures. There might be a guy that hasn't played before. Right. And that's the best part about pro-ams is just helping other people learn and grow their love for the game.
Yeah, but I'm sorry. I just don't believe you that when you say if somebody who's never played before, you're enjoying yourself.
Yeah, well, there was one time when we were playing up at Newman in the far north, and I had a lady who sponsored the tournament who had never touched a golf club before.
Oh, no.
And to try and help her sort of at least hit the ball and hit the ball forward took a fair bit of time, as well as trying to maintain your concentration on your game as well.
Sounds painful. I admire your patience if you can get through that.
Well, I think that's one good part about being a teaching pro as well, is you got to have the patience.
Right.
And at the level where if you're not on the main circuit where you get to play with the pros all the time, so you've got to play on a pro-am circuit, you come across that. And if you're someone who's not got that patience or done that level of experience of teaching, it can be quite hard. But doing it as I have, it's quite easy.
Okay. Well, more power to you, my friend. That's crazy. Well, are there any things about touring school, Q school that tour school and Q school are the same things, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Go ahead.
We probably have different names for it. You see it as tour school. We call it as Q school.
Okay. So, are there any things that surprised you when you first when you did your first one that you weren't anticipating?
Yeah, I think the more the business-like approach that all the pros have.
Uh-huh.
Whereas when we play on the little pro-am circuit that we've got here, we're all friends and we all get along and we all go have a drink afterwards and all that. Whereas when I went up to Q school, it was all business, which is understandable. We're all playing for our futures.
Right.
So we all go and do our own things.
But what happens? I mean, how do their attitudes change? How do they change? I guess getting your game face on.
That's it. That's basically it. This is, you're playing for your life, and if you muck around now, there's no turning back. You go out, you play golf to the best of your ability, and you go out and try. I'm not saying that they weren't trying, but you just have this different approach.
Very interesting.
Where every shot counts. Every shot counts.
And you are teaching? You are earning some money doing teaching as well?
Not at the moment.
Okay.
I'm having enough fun doing the cleaning at the restaurant and playing afterwards.
Yeah.
And practice. So I really don't have time for teaching.
So what's your strength? What in your game, not in your cleaning, but what is your strength of your game that makes you feel like this can set you apart and make you good enough to play professionally?
I hit the ball very straight.
Ooh, nice.
I don't hit the ball very long. I would say I probably average around 260 yards in your terminology.
Sure.
But I hit it very straight. I don't miss too many fairways. I don't miss too many greens. If there's parts that I can look at, which playing tournaments helps you do, because if you're not learning, there's no point playing golf. Mm. So short game's got a bit of work to do, pitching and chipping, and that's having your podcast has helped me that way. There's been some great people with – I pick up little tips all the time from your podcast, whether it be even Dennis with hands going back, hands going forward, or Tony Manzoni who with the body turn, and also with mental with Joseph Parent and that. You pick up tips all the time, and if you're not learning, as I said, you're not playing golf, and just short game and putting. They're the only two parts that I've really got to pick up on to help me get to the next level.
Mm-hmm. And, well, you know, it seems like at any level, the short game and putting is what's going to hold most people back.
Oh, absolutely. You can't afford a three-putt at the top level.
No.
And I did. To say that I only had one three-putt at the 36 holes in the last tournament was pretty good, but that three-putt eventually cost me the cut, and that three-putt was only from 10 feet because I got a little bit aggressive.
Oh.
Yeah.
Three-putt from 60, 70 feet, I understand, but from 10 feet, that's painful.
Yep. Hit it about 3 or 4 feet past and then miss it coming back.
So I guess for that level, you want to stay under 30 putts, under 28 putts around. Where do you want to be as far as the number of putts you have in a round?
Under 30.
Under 30.
Yeah. I think for a pro, you need to be between 27 and 30.
And you got to hit a lot of fairways and greens.
A lot of fairways, a lot of greens, unless you're Bubba Watson.
And then you just hit it far.
Then you just hit it anywhere and just make it up as you go along. That's how it appears to me anyway.
Do you find him to be one of the more creative people on playing today?
Oh, absolutely. That hook shot from the trees at Augusta was just unbelievable.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen anyone play that type of shot.
Mm.
Maybe Tiger might have the ability to do it when he was on top.
Right.
But no, that was unbelievable.
So you hit it straight, but are you accurate?
Yes.
Because those are two different things, aren't they?
They are two different things. Absolutely. Yesterday when I played the pre-qualification for the Perth International, I hit 15 greens.
Wow.
Yeah. I had 4 3-putts, but that's in a different environment. When you've only got 4 guys going through, you have to go full bore all day.
So you're very aggressive.
Very aggressive. A lot more aggressive than what you would be normally.
Interesting. Well, what do you tell somebody? Like, I got an email today from a listener, and thank you very much for listening. I'm flattered that you've found some useful information on the podcast. That's really nice. But here's somebody who's been listening for a while, and he says, no matter what I've tried, and he's written this before, and he cracks me up. Open stance, close stance, stand close to the ball, stand far from the ball, weight on my heels, weight on my toes, wide stance, narrow stance, taking a long backswing. He's so frustrated. And, you know, when I was saying, well, what about your short game? How are you doing? He goes, I just want to hit it longer and straighter. Right? How is that really the goal? You want to hit longer and straighter? I mean, straighter, yes, but is longer really the ultimate goal? For players who are getting up in age?
Well, it depends on what level you want to be. I found that I was about 20 to 30 yards short of where I needed to be on the Asian circuit.
And that's on your drives are you talking about?
Just on my drives.
Yeah. I would think it's like that's where the distance is the most important is that first shot. But after that, you've got a lot of other clubs in your bag to help you out.
Absolutely. And that's where short game is priority.
Mm-hmm.
But to that guy that you've just asked me about.
Stu, you listening?
I think that's where the US Tour and other tours sort of promote that sort of thing. where they put a high emphasis on Bubba hitting it 350 yards or 360 yards. So when people go out, they want to hit that long ball and don't realize that it doesn't matter. So long as I can find a way to get the ball in the hole in the fewest shots possible, whether it's being able to get up and down from 50 meters all the time, or I only hit my drives 200 meters, but I hit them straight and then hit the next one on the green and hole the putt. I don't think it matters. But I think the US, I'm just specifying the US tour, but there are other tours out there that you hear when Gary McCord and Peter Costas all the time say, wow, he's hit that 380 yards. And I think that's just makes everyone else go, well, I need to hit it that far. And it even affected me to that point. I spent probably last year trying to chase yardage where I shouldn't have. I should have been focusing in other areas.
Absolutely. And, you know, it makes me think that maybe, just maybe, that this emphasis on distance is part of what's contributing to so many people leaving the game. You know, I mean, there's no golf courses being built in this country. There was this huge, onslaught of construction being done because they wanted to make longer courses and 7,000 yard courses. And most people, you know, they're quitting. They're like, I can't play this. I can't hit it well. I can't, you know. And so with all this emphasis on going long all the time, maybe that's what's turning people away from it.
I've got to disagree with you on that point, Fred.
Please.
I actually think it's the length of time that we're taking to play golf.
People away.
I think so, yes. Uh-huh.
So how do we fix that?
I honestly don't know, to tell you the truth. I know that yesterday when I played, we took 5 hours in a four ball to play 18 holes.
Oof, that's too long.
That's too long. And that's basically four pros.
But actually touring golf, I mean, especially today, it seems to take more than 4 hours to play around on when we're watching on television.
And that's where the PGA Tour and other tours have to lead by example. Mm-hmm. You see the guys on TV and they take forever to find out their yardage and their caddy and them are talking over whether or not to hit this club, what it is to get over this bunker and all that. And it's just, I think if the tours clamp down a lot harder than what they do on bad times and pushing people through, then it'll go down to amateurs. Because all they do on tour is they just find guys. And when you're at that level, $1,000, $2,000 doesn't really mean anything to them. But if they started adding shots to their game, so let's say a guy's got on the number or one in front of the cut and they give him a two-stroke penalty and now he's missed the cut, that'll change things. That's what I believe.
Oh, that's an interesting thought. Instead of penalizing them financially, penalize them on their card.
Penalize them on their card. And once they start missing cuts because they start getting penalties, then they'll start speeding up.
Yeah, but they need the time for those commercials. Someone's got to pay for the broadcast.
It's got nothing to do with that, Fred.
No, they'd find a way to get it in. I'm sure they would.
They just fool around doing like you have the yardage book and there's so much information on the yardage book of from this sprinkler it's 200 yards to carry that bunker. And it's like, well, sometimes you need it, but then the caddy and the player go through, well, do I lay up short of it or do I go over? What's the advantage of going over? Can I get it up and down from that area or am I better off laying back and hitting a full shot in? It's those other sort of things that take the time.
Mm-hmm. So interesting. Well, Darren, I wish you all the luck in the entire planet in the world and hope that we get to see your name in the newspaper on a regular basis.
Thank you, Fred.
But you need one before you go, you've got to. For Richard, what's the name of the restaurant? We got to plug the restaurant.
Well, actually, I don't need to plug the restaurant because it's the biggest fast food chain in the world.
Oh.
It's the one with the golden arches.
Oh, okay. Mm. And does he have more than one that you work at?
I just work at one, but he has more than one.
Well, Richard, thank you. That's very kind of you for being so generous and letting Darren get his game on and hopefully become a success.
And his wife, Annie, as well.
And thank you, Annie. Richard and Annie, we appreciate that. So when you're playing, you're wearing a McDonald's shirt, huh?
I am, yes.
Do you have a name tag that has a little Darren on it as well? Does it have your name on it?
Only at work. Only at work.
And have you ever asked any of your playing partners if they wanted fries with that?
not if I can help it.
Darren, thanks so much. I really appreciate you reaching out because I find this to be an absolutely fascinating story. And I hope that you have great success with this.
Thank you, Fred. It's been enjoyable.
And thank you for listening, too.
My pleasure.
Maybe we'll get you a Golf Smarter shirt to wear someday on the tour.
That'd be very nice. I would enjoy that immensely.
You know, I've never asked that before. Would you be interested in a Golf Smarter golf shirt? If so, drop me a note and any specifics you'd like to include. And if there's enough of you that do respond, we'll put something special together. I would love to do that. I'd love to get those out to you. So I've just returned from a weekend in New Orleans where I played twice at TPC Louisiana, and hopefully we'll get the head pro on the show at some point soon. But it was pretty cold for this California weather wimp. It was even cold for the locals out there. I played twice, and the second round, nobody showed up. I was down there with my nephew and he and I were the only ones literally that I saw one other group out on the course when we teed off and played between 8 and noon. And actually that morning, my back nine, matched the temperature at 44 degrees. I posted a photo of me on my Fred Green Instagram page and also on our Golf Smarter group on Facebook. So check that out. My nephew and his friends say, no, under 50 degrees, ain't playing. So, yeah, in Canada, I know, you play when it's 112 degrees below zero. What can I tell you? Next up, I'm going to do something a little different to celebrate Thanksgiving. You're going to be introduced to Jason Faircloth of the U.S. Disabled Golf Association. Jason is looking for support and volunteers for their upcoming Open Championship. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, or any thoughts about that shirt, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.